What if you could see what's happening inside your body? Prenuvo's whole body scan screens for hundreds of conditions, including many solid tumors, as early as stage one, all in under an hour. And now, you can go beyond imaging. With 80-plus blood biomarkers that help complete the picture, this Labor Day, save $300 off your scan when you book at prenuvo.com. That's prenuvo.com. Save $300 now through September 8th at prenuvo.com. Terms and conditions apply.
Have you ever felt like you were living just a B or B plus life? It's so dangerous to live that, more dangerous than a B minus or a C plus life, because when you're living a B or B plus life, you don't change it. You think it's good enough. Is it? I'm Susie Welch. I host a podcast called Becoming You. People think, okay, an A plus life is not available to me, but there is a way. We are all in the process of becoming ourselves. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning and welcome to Sunday Take. For Sunday, August 17th, 2025, my name is Blois Olson, and I'm the host of this morning, afternoon, evening, look ahead, look behind, the week in politics in the Midwest. This week, our show is focused on St. Paul. St. Paul, you know, it has this, you know, stepbrother kind of complex compared to Minneapolis. And we talk about Minneapolis a lot, but I think over the last couple of weeks, we've seen Representative Kylie Herr announce she's running against Melvin Carter. We had a special election this week in which Molly Coleman won in Ward 4. She is the third generation of Coleman leader in the city of St. Paul. Her father, Chris, is a former mayor. Her grandfather was a Senate leader, ran for governor. And she talks in our interview in a different way of young progressives. And I think it's a contrast with what we hear out of other young progressives and what their vision of urban politics is, what their vision of priorities are in a city. And she won this seat, both A, out of organizing, B, out of resources, and C, because she brought a certain energy, I think, to the race that overwhelmed her opponents. Then we'll talk to Kylie Herr, who's challenging Mayor Carter. She used to be his policy director. And loyalty is a big issue in politics. And so when somebody challenges their former boss in politics, it says that there's got to be a deep-seated concern or distrust or feeling that they can do a better job or that something else isn't getting done. And we talked to Representative Herr about why she's challenging Mayor Carter. St. Paul has a special place in my heart. When I returned from D.C., I lived in St. Paul for a number of years. It was always the city that I associated with more. My mom worked on University Avenue for a number of years. The first offices of my first companies were on Grand Avenue. And despite living in the West Metro now, we have an office in St. Paul at Fluence. And I just think that it deserves to be amplified a little more than it is. St. Paul is struggling. But like I've said before, the whole state will benefit from a strong Minneapolis, and frankly, the whole region will benefit from a strong St. Paul. The region and the metro area is challenged right now. Greater MSP came out this week with their annual dashboard, and it showed that our economic growth is not keeping up with our peers. It goes so far as to say that our quality of life in Minnesota and in the region is at risk if we don't have the economic growth. Economic growth can happen with investment, with innovation. I think more of that has to come from the private sector, but it's good that we have public sector and nonprofit people concerned about this, raising the alarm. I think the alarm needs to get louder, and we'll talk about that in the take. But if you think about St. Paul, you think about its place in the region, you think about its dire downtown, the need to ensure that Xcel Energy Center doesn't become an island of activity for the wild and for concerts. And you think about the corridors from West 7th to University to Highland to Grand Avenue. Then you look at the east side, Payne Phelan area. There's a lot to be sparked from small business to large business. And I think it's worth talking about as much as Minneapolis. So we'll talk about that with Molly Coleman, with Kylie Herr, and then I'll have a take on what St. Paul needs to think about as it reinvents itself and tries to attract outside capital. This week on Sunday Take, I'm Blois Olson. When we come back, new city council member, Molly Coleman. Welcome back to Sunday Take. My first guest this week is Molly Coleman. She was just elected to the St. Paul City Council in a special election. She comes from a heritage of political leaders in our city and our state. And I'm glad she can join me for Sunday Take. Molly, congratulations on your victory.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Let's just start with your background. You know, people don't just wake up and decide to run for city council. You know, I know a little bit about your path, but talk about, you know, your leadership before deciding to run for city council, some of the issues that you've carved out and that you're passionate about, and then why you finally decided that it was time to run for public office.
Yeah, so I started my career working in public education. I had gone to St. Paul Public Schools and really saw the value of having strong public schools where we were able to provide support for all young people, regardless of background, race, socioeconomic status. So started off working in public education, providing student support services, loved that work, but ultimately felt like in public schools, we were too often trying to solve problems downstream from their source and really wanted to be a part of achieving the systemic change that would truly provide the opportunities and the lives that all the students I was working with deserved. So went to law school, an interesting experience to go to law school thinking you will be learning how to contribute to systemic change and realizing that you are more often than not being trained to preserve and protect a status quo that works for far too few. So ended up co-founding a national legal advocacy organization back in 2018 that I've been running ever since, which has focused on building a legal system that actually works for working people and looking at sort of those structures of our society and trying to understand what would it look like to change them so that the people have power and not just the wealthy and privileged. I've loved that work. It's been fantastic. We've done a lot of work around workers' rights, a lot of work around economic justice, really trying to, again, change the status of the many. It's been excellent work that I have felt very proud to do. But when this seat opened up, it felt like the right moment to start thinking about what does it look like to build economic justice locally? What does it mean to build a democracy that actually works for the people here in St. Paul in this moment in time? So not quite waking up one morning and deciding to run, but certainly when the seat opened up, it felt like a pretty unique opportunity. And I decided to throw my hat into the ring, and I'm very glad that I did.
When you talk about economic justice, democracy that works for all, you know, Minnesota has elections at work. You, St. Paul has, as and Mayor Carter have focused on making sure that there was, you know, more investment in certain communities. What else do you think St. Paul needs to do? What are your priorities now that you're elected to raise visibility on or try to change in St. Paul when you talk about economic justice or a system that works for people?
Yeah, I'll maybe start on the democracy front because I think that's so essential with local government. You know, when it comes to the St. Paul City Council, we don't have the ability to solve for everything, but I think we really do have an incredible opportunity to show that government can be responsive to the needs of the people in our community, and that if we work together, we can collectively do hard things and really make life better for people. So I think some of that is just basics when it comes to constituent services and being responsive and being out in the community and understanding what are the needs that people are experiencing and then translating that into budget decisions or policy decisions. I think that that is, it goes to me so far beyond just having elections that work and having decently high voter turnout here in Minnesota and really getting into how do we make our government run in a way that is responsive to the needs of the community. On the economic justice front, you know, I do feel very proud to live in a city that has done, I think, so much to advance economic justice. And having been out on the campaign trail for the last 7 months, I've heard over and over again that our city is too expensive, that the cost of living is too high, that people are struggling to make ends meet. You know, we have had rising property taxes for many years at this point. That's both difficult for homeowners, but it's also passed on to renters in the form of increased rent. We've had, you know, the tax-based struggles that we've seen in St. Paul in recent years, when people are really feeling the consequences of that and feeling the fact that we aren't able to provide the basic services of the city at the level that we would like to. So I think that there is so much, you know, we're going to be going straight into this budget cycle in City Hall, really making sure that we are putting our values into action when it comes to what we are prioritizing on spending, but also really working to rein in those rising costs for families.
One of the dynamics in St. Paul has been the mayor's relationship with the council. Are there things that you think you can work with the mayor on directly, or are there things that you believe the council needs to, you know, kind of push back against the mayor?
You know, what I heard over and over again during this campaign is that people want City Hall to work. They don't care who gets credit for it. They aren't worried about anything other than feeling like City Hall is functional and focused on the actual issues impacting people's lives. And I have every confidence. I know it's been a hard year or two in City Hall, but every single person that I've sat down with, from the mayor's team to other council members to city staff, I have the utmost respect for. I feel really, really confident that we will have great working relationships and that there will be a real focus on the actual work.
As we wrap up, you talked about housing, you talked about, you know, property taxes. Are there things in city government that you believe either need to be, you know, kind of peeled back, or are there different ways to pay for things that other cities are doing where maybe innovation or efficiencies can be achieved?
That's a great question. I think that really what I have heard from people and my basic analysis of the situation is that the most important thing that St. Paul should be focused on when it comes to our city budget is how are we growing our tax base? If we don't have that growth, we are going to be perpetually in the state that we're in now, where we're having to make incredibly hard trade-offs when it comes to either raising property taxes or not funding essential services. And that just doesn't work. It doesn't allow our city to put our best foot forward. It doesn't allow us to really meet the needs of our most vulnerable residents. So we have to be relentlessly focused on building that tax base, bringing in the prosperity to the city of St. Paul that will allow us to run the city in the way that we want to. And I think when we look at downtown, when we look at, you know, Midway and Ward 4, there are so many opportunities, so many places in the city where it feels like we're right on the cusp of taking a big step forward and bringing in new housing investment, bringing in new business. And it's something that I'm really excited about and that I think medium and long term will just allow our city to be in a much more solid place than we are currently.
Molly Coleman, city council member elect, thanks for joining me on Sunday Take. And I know we'll talk down the line.
Excellent. Thanks so much.
When we come back, Mayor Carter's challenger, Kylie Herr, will join me on the Sunday Take. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Sunday Take. Final interview this week is with Representative Quali Herr. She is a candidate for mayor, as I mentioned in the open, and she's running against Melvin Carter. She used to work with Mayor Carter, and she's decided to challenge the mayor this fall, and I want to know why. And I think I get that question a lot. Representative Herr, thanks for joining me.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
So, let's just start with, you know, your background, who you are and why you decided to challenge Mayor Carter this fall.
Yeah, absolutely, Blois. Well, I want to say that. So my name is pronounced Kali.
Thank you.
And I will say that, I'm not, I wouldn't look at this as necessarily a challenge to Mayor Carter, but an effort to ensure that democracy has full participation. And so, and that's really important to me because I am somebody who was born in a country in which I wouldn't have had any rights as a woman. I was born in Laos, in the mountains of Laos, and I came to this country when I was 3 years old. And my background really has been one of grit and determination. My parents worked really hard to provide a life for my siblings and I. There were times where we grew, you know, we lived in poverty and I ate one meal a day for what felt like years. I had public education that supported me. My father and mother worked blue collar jobs at times, and our family's trajectory changed when my father, owned my mom and dad purchased a home, but also that they started their own businesses. So like my life has been sort of the intersection of many, many different things and inform why certain things matter to me. I went on to go to college to get my undergraduate in finance from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. I eventually got my MBA, and I spent 15 years in the private sector doing investments and finance work, which means I bring a really strong financial acumen and understanding economics and business into my experience, into this work. And then, I went on to actually being a stay-at-home mom for some points and understanding what it means to try to build wealth as a first-generation person on one income. And after that, I ended up working in education, nonprofits, foundations, and ultimately ended up in government. And so my journey has brought me to many, many different places. And I think that I bring all of that with me into this work, which is why I think it makes me a strong candidate to run this city.
You say that you're not necessarily challenging Mayor Carter, but you have to be running because you think that you could be a better mayor. What are some issues that you think need to be highlighted in St. Paul that maybe the mayor isn't highlighting or isn't focused on?
I think that there are some key things that we have to address within our cities, and we have to be honest about what our city is facing, right? I mean, we think about, you know, some of the things that I'm looking at first is like safe communities. When we think about living and thriving and doing well, that our communities need to feel safe. And we often look at safe neighborhoods as just whether there's violent crime or not, or if that up or down. But truthfully, that we are seeing our non-police emergency calls double in this year. As of July, our firefighters went on more runs than they did of all of last year, right? We face continued challenges in mental health and drug use in our community. And for me, supporting all the systems that will be able to address these issues, whether it is, you know, partnerships with our county and our state partners, or whether it is our first responders, our community partners, those providing mental health support, our healthcare systems, like I would be working collaboratively with all of these entities in order for us to address this issue. I would say the second thing that I think is really important for us to look at is our vibrant economy, right? It's not lost upon any of us who live in the city that our downtown is struggling. We have seen development at our Ford site come to a halt. There's minimal development over at the Hillcrest site. And so our thriving economy means that essentially, you know, we need to look at all aspects of our city to see why it is that we are losing critical retailers in our neighborhoods, and because that stretches our tax base. And also about how we collaborate with our residents, communities, local unions, developers, and just, you know, those who care about St. Paul to ensure that we have jobs that are well-paying, that are union jobs, that we make sure that in our economy that we allow small businesses, those like my father's when I was growing up, to be able to thrive and to grow in our city. And so vibrant economy is really critical. It's at the center of being able to have the types of neighborhoods and the type of city that we want. And I would say that the third part for me is really affordable housing that I hear from everyone that I talk to, whether they are students and they are young, to our seniors, that housing is too expensive, that there's not enough housing. And as the mayor, I will work with our county and state to build more public housing and local independent developers to build affordable housing and large developers to build more market rate units, because we need a mix and a combination of all of these things. So those are the things that I see. I know that's a lot, but there's a lot that we have to address in this city.
You brought up the Highland Bridge Project and Hillcrest. Mm-hmm. You brought up affordable housing. Do you think it was a mistake for St. Paul to implement rent control and Mayor Carter to support it?
So I would say that, you know, the voters decided, and whether it is that we think that it is a mistake or not, this is where we are now. And how is it that we're going to look at what's already been done and say, how will we move forward? I will say that in addition to, you know, how people might feel about rent control, as I've been talking to partners and developers and, in, you know, everyone who cares about housing in the city, one of the biggest issues is actually political risk, right? And I know people think of political risk in like other countries saying like, well, you know, is the country stable? But the truth is that we used to pass ordinances and initiatives in St. Paul on, you know, 7-0 basis. And today, most of everything passes on a 4-3 split. And for people looking to invest in our city, they're saying, what is the political risk of being in St. Paul? That the change of one city council member, the change of a relationship between a mayor and one person will change the outcome, the political stability. And I think that that is something we have to really look at and say, why has there been such political instability here in St. Paul? And, you know, from what I understand is that there has not been good working relationship between City Hall, the mayor's office, and its city council members. And working collaboratively has not been something that that has been an asset for this particular administration. And so, you know, I think that that has a bigger bearing on what happens with development and investment in our city.
You talked earlier about your background in finance and budget. Attracting capital to the city is obviously going to be key. Look at downtown. Look at the housing programs that you, or the housing sites that you talked about. What is it about cities or St. Paul that you believe the city, the mayor can do to attract capital to the downtown, which is clearly struggling? What are the first few pieces that you think could create a catalyst for, you know, a little revival of downtown St. Paul?
Yeah, I think that we've forgotten who we are as a city. We are a city that was built on grit and determination from all of the people who've come to make this city great. And that the city itself has great amenities. It has a river that runs through that downtown. It has a strong workforce. It has an educated workforce. We have a good education system. And I think that those types of things are the things that we have to remember that is the foundation of who we are, which means that attracting people to our city's never going to look the same as it did pre-pandemic. It's never going to look the same as it did, you know, prior to the civil unrest. Like, there's a lot of differences that our city is experiencing now. And so my main goal is that as the executive of the city, your job is to sell the city. And that means that we have to go out and proactively look at which types of businesses are looking to expand, where it is that businesses are looking to add either lines of business or the markets that they're going into, and that we have to be in front of those businesses. From what I understand from working with the chamber and from different nonprofit entities who are on the streets every day looking to see the change in the business environment, that we as a city is not getting in front of opportunities. Not only are we not getting in front of opportunities, we're not even getting in front of people who are saying, we need help and we're going to close our doors. Look at what happened with the Cub Foods, the Lunds, small businesses closing everywhere. Is that all partners are saying when they are coming to the city saying, we just want to navigate the system of how to keep ourselves open and resources that are available to us and who we can partner with, that the city is not showing up to those conversations. City Hall is missing from those conversations. And so we have to do the basics of allowing people to actually invest in our city, which means that somebody needs a permit and they want to be able to build, that we don't become the hardest city to do business in. I will tell you that in every conversation I've had, I have been told by people who want to invest in the city that St. Paul is the hardest city to do business in. And when I ask them, what does that mean? They don't tell me that it is because we have much more strict requirements than anybody else. It is because navigating city government is impossible for them, and that they would rather use that time and resources to invest themselves in a city that is open for business. St. Paul has to be open for business for us to even begin to have conversations about how do we redevelop for the new vision of what we see St. Paul being. St. Paul can't just be waiting around and saying that, well, if people know how to navigate, they can, and we're not going to help them through the process of knowing what it is they need in order to open a business up here. So I think that we have to even look at the core of how we do business before we can start looking at how do we then bring people to invest into the city.
One of the big projects that's on the horizon is upgrades, improvements, investment in Xcel Energy Center and River Center. What do you think the best kind of formula for getting the upgrades that the Wild and the, you know, the River Center Authority have asked for in that facility? What do you think the best kind of way to take that path forward is?
Sure. And I want to be respectful about how I answer this question, because I will say that as they come to the legislature and as a sitting state representative, this was an issue that came in front of us. But I will say that, when it was proposed to us, it was a really big plan to not just look at the Excel, but the other areas within. I think that the center actually has three different distinct areas that come into this one building. And when we asked questions about how the project could be broken up so that we could look at what could be doable, we didn't often get good answers from our city representatives about how that could be done. And I will say that up until it came directly to us, we hadn't had a lot of conversations with the city. And it's not because of, I would say that it's not because of lack of desire from legislators to want to know. We want our city to succeed. But when the partners who are coming to you are not being proactive about sharing plans and being involved in being proactive, it is really challenging for us to balance that with all of the other state needs that are in front of us, and frankly, all the other city needs that were in front of us. And so I would say that in addressing that issue, I would need to know more information. I would have to actually sit down with the different partners and say what is necessary and what is what we would like to do. And because I do know that in order for us to have our downtown thriving, we not only need businesses and activity down there, but we need to have good partners around entertainment, which means that we make sure our Ordway stays healthy, that we make sure that our sports teams stay here. And so it is something that is top of mind for me to work through.
My guest is Representative Kaylee Herr. She is the state rep, but she's running for mayor of St. Paul. And we're talking about what St. Paul needs. We've talked about downtown. We've talked about housing. Let's talk about neighborhoods. Let's talk about Grand Avenue. Let's talk about University. There's corridors in St. Paul that, previously were very vibrant. I grew up with a mom who worked on University. I used to have an office on Grand. Obviously retail has changed. But there's been just kind of this idea that even in the University corridor, there was some, new investment once light rail came through, but there just seems to be this slowing around both the Loon Stadium and Grand Avenue, just people not being attracted to the city. When you talk to folks in those neighborhoods, what do they think the reason people aren't opening shops or restaurants there? Is it about the city? Is it about the economy? What do you hear from folks?
I will tell you that the number one thing I hear from folks is working with City Hall. That is usually the first thing that comes to mind. People want to be in St. Paul. St. Paul is the city that grows, people into being able to move on to the next parts of their lives, whether it is homeownership or whether it is growing businesses. Like, this is where it starts. And I would say that it's more than just the Grand Avenue and University corridors. I mean, we have the East Side that has a vibrant, Asian American, Southeast Asian community. We have a West Side that has a vibrant and strong, Latino, community. And in the Midway, there's one of the most diverse, having our African, East African, our Hmong community, our Karen community. Our North End has a strong Karen presence. Like, our city is home to some of the most entrepreneurial people. And time again, I hear that they want to make the investments. But one, it is that financial institutions have a challenge giving them loans, not for many reasons, but some of it is also around stability and the risk of being in St. Paul. But the other is the number one issue is being able to work with the city in order to put these businesses into place. And so overwhelmingly, that is it.
As we wrap up here, obviously you have a relationship with Mayor Carter. Have you talked to him? Does he understand your concerns? And is there a moment where you said the only thing you could do is run against him, to try to fix the city? Or has he, kind of decided that, he's not going to talk to you about the challenges?
Oh, actually, Mayor Carter and I consider him my friend. He was my mentor for many years. He and I had a number of conversations before I decided to run. I called him many times. We even had a sit down one time to discuss some of the issues that I had been hearing from residents and from businesses. And those conversations actually was what led me to deciding I would run. And when I was going to run days beforehand, I had two conversations with him asking for help, understanding the direction in which a third term would be that a third term would mean for him. And, you know, like those conversations is what led me to running. And I will say that the sort of the thing that pushed me over was that I always remember what Melissa Hortman said to me as someone I worked very closely at the legislature, that these seats don't belong to us, that we have to earn the right every single time to be representing people because it is a privilege to do so. And we were in July already, and I saw that there had been very little to engage voters to so that he could hear directly from voters and from residents as to the issues that they were seeing. And I didn't see any of that happening. And so I jumped in because democracy only works when we participate vigorously and that we debate the issues in front of us. And so those were the reasons why I jumped in. And I did have conversation with Mayor Carter before here.
Representative Herr, I want to thank you for joining me on Sunday Take. Both you and Mayor Carter have been invited to a debate before the election here on Sunday Take. I hope you join me, and I know we'll talk down the line.
Absolutely. I welcome it. Thank you, Blois.
Thank you. When we come back, this week's take. Welcome back to Sunday Take. This week's take is about St. Paul, our capital city, the saintly city on the banks of the Mississippi. When you look at the geography of St. Paul, you see that it has so much potential. The island, the Mississippi banks, the Science Museum, Xcel Energy Center. The downtown dilemma for St. Paul should be seen as the top priority of whoever the next mayor is. How does downtown St. Paul reinvent itself? One of the biggest issues in St. Paul is its tax base. Between government, nonprofit, university, it struggles to have a broad tax base. So bringing back some sort of tax base to downtown could be helpful. There's a few ways to do that, but I think the most energizing way would be to attract a company, a fast growth company, a new company, or an existing headquarters company to downtown St. Paul. Undoubtedly, in the next year or four, there will be a company that is seeking a new headquarters. Nationally, there may be fast growth companies in our region that seek new headquarters. From Sports Engine to Unreal Clothing to Waggle to some of the food companies, there would seem to be an opportunity to bring workers downtown, private sector workers downtown. And I think the next mayor needs to make that the top priority. In fact, when you consider the bankruptcy of an existing real estate portfolio, the back taxes that are owed on many buildings that have very little value, the city and the mayor should find a way to bring a new headquarters company downtown St. Paul. And why stop at one? Maybe there's two. The former Lawson building is still in great shape. It has vacancy. Some of the core buildings downtown, from the Securian building to others, have adjacent buildings that could be retrofitted and brought back to life. The closing of the Lunds downtown was not necessarily about people not being in downtown living. It was about workers not being there during the day and security. You heard Kylie Hurd talk about public safety, from firefighters to police. Downtown has to be safe. It has to feel clean. But you can only do that one block or two blocks at a time. And I think that's where the next mayor needs to focus their work. But as Kylie Hurst said, no headquarters company is going to come if the city's difficult to work with. So the city and running the city for businesses, for citizens, needs to be easier to work with. St. Paul has long been a little behind technologically at City Hall. I remember a story from when Chris Coleman took over as mayor and was inheriting DOS systems in a Windows world. planning documents for new buildings or redevelopment had to be submitted in physical form when other cities took them in electronic form. Piles of blueprints and site plans were in the Planning and Economic Development office. That was no way to be efficient. You think about where technology is now. It's time for technology to make things easier for small business, for citizens. That comes with a responsive city council, a council that's responsive to making sure that there is economic prosperity. And that's where Molly Coleman nailed it. As a young progressive, she didn't lean into the socialistic tendencies that is so popular amongst young professionals right now, but rather she talked about bringing prosperity back to lift up all folks and make sure that the tax base in St. Paul was stronger in her ward and throughout the city. The regional economic indicators that I talked about in the open, that Evan Ramstead wrote about this week, should be in front of all of our faces as we think about how to re-energize our region's economy. Our so Minnesotan contentment needs to find an edge of competitiveness. Where we want to be better, how do we be better, and where do we attract the next level of investment, of workers, etc. One of the lagging places we have in these indicators is recruitment of 25 to 34-year-olds, early professionals. They don't need to be white-collar jobs, and they certainly don't need to be fancy jobs, but that's where the next middle class will come from. That's where the homeowners of the future of St. Paul will come from. The people who will visit restaurants, will send their kids to schools, will create the property tax base and make sure that the city brings back the vibrancy that it once had. Both our cities are challenged right now, but we are better as a state if they are successful. But that success is going to depend on recruiting people from outside the state, people from outside of our current economy to invest, to grow, and to stimulate our urban areas. And so, dear Minnesota, stop being so parochial when it comes to solving our problems, but rather recruit, retain, and become a magnet for people to come to St. Paul, to come to Minneapolis, and the folks of the next generation to grow this region through good jobs, good housing, and great schools. I'm Blaise Olson. That's the Sunday Take. I'll be with Vanita all week. Next Sunday, we'll be at the fair live. We'll have a bipartisan, bicameral conversation about the values of Minnesota, from rural Minnesota to urban center. We'll be on the porch at WCCO Radio. You can always see our stuff at thedailyagenda.com. Until next week, that's the take.
Girl, let's get real. Some pads are just diapers with a good PR team. But not the new Kotex BioCare. That's because Kotex BioCare helps defend against odor and irritants. And it's the first and only pad with this pH proactive system that helps optimize the pad's pH. Just think of it as self-care for down there. Check out Kotex.com for more details on the all-new Kotex, completely redesigned to meet your needs. You asked, we heard.
What you're listening to presumably doesn't suck, so neither should your sound system. Sonos lets you listen seamlessly from room to room. Same great sound, expertly tuned, astonishingly clear. It's not magic, but it's not not magic.